fastest-growing cities, Odessa. Many rural regions in our state and country often suffer from a lack of resources and access to everyday needs, certainly high-quality health care. However, that's not a factor in the basin. From doctors, nurses, and aides to therapists, chaplains, and social workers, who are the staple of our community and also serve as an uplifting silver lining amid such a difficult and trying pandemic. Their stories of dedication are nothing short of remarkable, providing paths for patients to reconnect with the family and homes they've longed to see again. They alleviate loneliness and distress with a warm touch, a friendly smile, and welcome conversations, all while delivering essential care patients require as they seek within care. While each entity is unique to the services it provides, collectively, their respective staff embodies what is expected of the human spirit: dignity, compassion, and love. From the chaplain delivering a word of prayer, the social worker advocating for her patient, a nurse aide entrusted to assist in daily living activities, the therapist celebrating with his patient after those first steps taken following recovery from a stroke, or the nurse comforting a family as their loved one takes her final breath, are examples of how the most compassionate acts of caring broadcast a ray of much-needed positivity and hope for brighter days ahead. As you take a walk in your neighborhood or a drive to around town, look around you and take note. The virus may be invisible, but those who have helped us all get through it never will be. See the signs. Whether it's a cross atop a church, a nurse leaving her shift at a skilled nursing facility, or a rehab patient completing their last day of therapy onto a new life of independence, this is life in the basin, thriving with energy and determination that will take us into tomorrow. When this pandemic finally comes to an end, I'm certain we can reflect upon the countless silver linings left from it. Perhaps it's a renewed connection to friends and family, taking an inventory of being more community-minded in helping others, extending additional generosity to those in need, or simply taking a collective breath to reflect upon what is truly important in our lives. One thing for certain, the work of healthcare professionals serving hospice, skilled nursing, assisted living, and inpatient rehabilitation represent the interwoven threads within these linings, shining brightly as a renewed testament to the human spirit and hope for our future. Levi Stone, RN, MSN. Everything's Coming Up Bluebonnets for Milam Librarian, by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. After many years as a math teacher, Jennifer Marks decided to make the switch to librarian and found it was her dream job. Now the media specialist at Milam Elementary, Marks was recently named to the Texas Bluebonnet Award Programming Committee. We are in charge of promoting the Bluebonnet list on the website. There are resources like readers' theaters, and we put links on it like the author interviews or book talks, things like that that we have, said Marks, who is in her fifth year as media specialist at Milam Elementary School. It's a lot of promoting, she added. The application to be chosen for the Bluebonnet Committee is long. Being on the board is a three-year commitment, and when librarians go off the committee, they send out an application. Anyone who is on the Children's Roundtable or Texas Association of School Librarians can fill out the application. It's a lot of questions about what you've done with Bluebonnet books, what you've done as far as researching the resources, and what kind of books are out there, computer programs you can use, and different things like that. They look through all the applications and choose which ones fit best. Then you're asked if you want to be on the committee. You have to have two references also, Marks said. Being named to the committee was a surprise. I've wanted to do it for several years, but it's a lot of work, and so I would get part of the application done, and then I didn't finish it. I finally just said, I need to do this, and I was shocked because it's a small group, And there are a lot of people who want to do it, Marks said. She said she applied for the selection and program committees. The Bluebonnet program, she said, is good for introducing students to different kinds of books, from picture and chapter books to fiction and nonfiction. She noted that public libraries can also participate in the Bluebonnet program. She said ECISD is planning a Battle of the Bluebonnets this year, but each elementary school will create projects on the books. Then those projects will be judged, and 10 schools that have the highest points on those projects will get to participate in the battle. Marks said it wouldn't be held until late this spring and will include just 10 schools. At last year's battle, 23 schools squared off. Originally from San Angelo, Marks first began teaching in Big Lake 23 years ago. She is in her 8th year as a librarian and 5th year at Milam. She earned a bachelor's degree in psychology from Angelo State University and got her teaching certification. She received a master's in library science from Texas Woman's University. Marks wound up at Ector County ISD because of her husband, Howard Marks, director of the Learning Resource Center at Midland College. When I was in Big Lake, we met each other on Match.com, and he's actually a librarian also. Whenever we got married, I moved here, Marks said. Howard Marks was at UTPB previously before moving to MC. After teaching math for 15 years, Marks said it was getting to the point where she needed a change. I love the kids. I love working with them, but I didn't want to teach math anymore. At that time, I was actually in a different school district. I loved to read myself. The librarian there was leaving, and I thought, hey, that's a great way to still work with the kids and do something different. It's a dream job, actually. I love it, she said. She said she loves being at Milam with all its arts activities, and added that principal, Natalie Fitzgerald, is wonderful. The teachers here are all very supportive of each other. I lucked out because I didn't know anything about any of the schools. I had a couple of offers that year because there were a lot of vacancies in the library, and I chose this one, and thank goodness, because I really do like it, Marks said. Jamie Miller, executive director of curriculum and instruction for ECISD, said reading not only helps children experience a world other than their own, it also helps them learn new words and phrases, experience a range of emotions, and acquire skills and knowledge. No one knows this better than Jennifer Marks, media specialist at Milam Elementary. We are very proud of Mrs. Marks for being selected to serve on the Texas Bluebonnet Program Committee. I know that Mrs. Marks' excitement and love for the 2021 Bluebonnet books will not only impact her students at Milam, but will impact all of the students in ECISD, Miller said. Texas Library Association, TXLA.org. Texas Bluebonnet Award, TINYUR.com/LVJD40XQ. Master Gardeners. Passion Flower is a vine with color appeal and history by Debbie Rowland, Master Gardener. When you see a passion flower, Passiflora spp, it seems to be a very delicate vine with tropical flowers. While that is true, it is also a hardy plant that grows well. Early Spanish explorers named this vine for the religious significance they found in the elaborate and gorgeous flower. Texas has several species of native passion flowers, most common in the eastern third of Texas. All of them share the intricate flower with its distinctive structure. Although the native passion flowers are generally well-mannered, there is a naturalized Asian variety that can be invasive in certain habitats. Native passion flowers have a 3-lobed leaf. The Asian variety has a 5-lobed leaf. Indigenous people ate the fruit and used the roots and leaves medicinally as a tonic or poultice for cuts and inflammation and nerves. There are many varieties of passion flower, and they can be purple, blue, red, white, or pink. The vine grows rapidly in full sun or partial shade. A trellis or support is required, since it can grow up to 30 feet tall and 3 feet to 6 feet wide. When planting, add compost to the planting hole to provide nutrients. Mulching will help retain moisture. Water once or twice a week throughout the growing season if there is no rain. Apply an all-purpose fertilizer in early spring with equal parts of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Repeat every 4 weeks. This vine is very low maintenance. No deadheading is needed, but you may want to prune to keep the vine from taking over anything else growing close by, because it attaches itself to anything it comes in contact with. After the first freeze, the plant goes dormant and will die back. Prune to 6 inches from the ground and remove all dead vines, because this plant flowers on new growth. In a backyard habitat, passion flower provides nectar for pollinating insects and food for birds. It also a larval host for several butterfly species, including one of my favorites, a Gulf fritillary. So if you want a vine with color, appeal, and history, this is the plant for you. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or 686-4700 in Midland. Email Jeanette.Castagnon, that's Jeanette, .castanon at ag.tamu.edu, or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Texas Master Gardeners. We are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. Spring garden prep should begin soon. We have had hints of warmer weather. This means the season change will be here soon. It is important to begin your spring garden prep now. Start getting ready for the spring hustle by making sure garden equipment is clean, hoses are in good repair, and other equipment is in good condition. Perennials like American Beautyberry and Texas Lantana can be cut down to the ground and all of the old wood removed, as they completely regrow every year. How you prune depends on your plant. Spring bloomers should only be pruned after they bloom. Study up on the plant's proper care. Some trees and shrubs require almost no pruning whatsoever, or even are averse to it. However, sometimes even the staunchest native may need a bit of a cleanup to remove dead wood, limbs too low to the ground, or branches overhanging a building. Just about any potted perennial can be planted at this time. Summer and fall blooming perennial flowers can be transplanted and divided in anticipation of spring growth. Crepe myrtles. People are still pruning these trees, so let us just tell you. Do not be an offender. Do not commit crepe murder. Lopping off your tree does not increase the quantity of blooms, and the weak one-year-old wood cannot even withstand the weight of its own flowers. Leave the tree alone. All it needs is for diseased or dead wood to be cut off, as well as suckers to be removed from the base. Ornamental grass. Prune around this time. All a native grass needs is a good fluffing. Take some good leather gloves and make upward raking motions with open hands. This removes dead matter while maintaining the plant itself. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland. Email Jeanette. Castagnon at ag.tamu.edu or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu. westtexasgardening.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Castagnon is a horticulturist with Texas AgriLife Extension Service. She can be reached at 686-4700 or by email at Jeanette.Castagnon, J-E-A-N-E-T-T-E dot C-A-S-T-A-N-O-N at ag.tamu.edu. Gardening, Jeanette Castagnon. Pets of the Week. Photos courtesy of Odessa Humane Society. Tux, a six-month-old male cat, needs to be adopted into a good home. Tessie, a four-year-old female Chihuahua mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Tux or Tessie, or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane. Call 381-5503. Visit www.odessahumanesociety.org or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50. Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Sunday, February 21st, 2021. Life and Times. Polar vortex highlights emergency preparedness. Like others, I had never experienced the type of weather that literally crippled our great state of Texas last week. Fortunately, my family and I were well prepared ahead of the vicious polar vortex, ensuring we had the basic essentials to get us through. Unfortunately, this disaster revealed just how many were not ready to handle such an emergency. According to a recent poll, nearly 41% of U.S. adults state they aren't prepared for a natural disaster. Of those that do say they are prepared, only 39% indicated having an emergency kit and non-perishable food stocks. The Permian Basin has certainly not been immune to its share of disasters. While we never expected crippling sub-zero temperatures to be the culprit, past years have brought upon drought, extreme heat, and even wildfires, leaving a stark reminder that disasters do and will continue to occur, regardless of the season. Aside from natural disasters, the threat of man-made catastrophes is just as prevalent. From hazardous material exposures to occupational mishaps, the potential should always be considered high for such instances to occur. Preparing for the unexpected is crucial, because disasters aren't a matter of if they'll happen, but when the next one will occur. Several reference and resource materials are available to help you and your family prepare, such as those offered by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. In the meantime, now is the best time to start collecting essential items to have on hand. Building a disaster kit can be inexpensive and easy to maintain. The basic elements of a disaster kit should include water, 1 gallon per person per day, non-perishable foods, such as ready-to-eat meals and canned foods, first aid kit, batteries, hand crank-style flashlights and radios, particularly an NOAA weather radio all hazards, NWR radio, copies of important phone numbers and documents, personal hygiene items, toilet paper, feminine supplies, hand sanitizer, soap, tools, multipurpose, hammers, nails, duct tape, utility knife, bungee cords, etc. Plastic sheeting in large plastic bags for sanitations and waste collection. Any special needs items for children, seniors, and or disabled persons. Essential supplies for any pets in the home. Once you've established a basic disaster kit, it is important to periodically check the contents and replace items as necessary, such as food nearing or past expiration. A good complement to the kit can also include grab-and-go packs for each family member. Grab-and-go packs are a streamlined version of the household disaster kit and are designed just as they sound, to quickly grab when having to evacuate an area. In these instances, you and your family should have a plan in the event evacuation is necessary. Make sure family members know where disaster kits are located. Keep a flashlight in each bedroom, along with a pair of shoes by each bed, in case an emergency occurs at night. Designate where to meet after a disaster. Choose two locations, one just outside your home and one outside your neighborhood. Identify at least two escape routes from your home and outside your neighborhood. Get in the habit of keeping your vehicle's gas tank at least half full. Have conversations with children about disasters and conduct practice drills. This will lessen anxiety and help get them involved. Establish an emergency contact, particularly someone outside the area not impacted by the disaster. Like this major disaster, it might be several days before vital services are restored. All too often, the public relies almost exclusively on efforts from local, state, and federal agencies to respond and provide assistance during an emergency. Ideally, the more prepared individuals are before disaster strikes, the more effectively resources can be utilized to lessen the strain and mitigate the situation efficiently. The earlier you begin to organize personal disaster preparedness, the better your chances of getting through a catastrophe with fewer headaches. Need more information on disaster preparedness? On the web, the following links provide easy-to-use references, checklists, and examples related to a variety of disaster scenarios. Ready.gov, TexasPrepares.org, dshs.state.tx.us/preparedness. Levi Stone, RN, MSN. Master Gardeners, Tough Perennial is Versatile and Low Maintenance. By Debbie Rowland and Emmy Olmschneider, Master Gardeners. Liriope, Liriope SPP, is an evergreen, tough, grass-like perennial. Also called monkey grass, lily turf, and border grass, it is widely used in West Texas landscapes because it is versatile and low maintenance. The plant is often confused with mondo grass, which has thinner leaves and the flowers actually hide within the clumps. Although not a grass, Liriope is a monocot and in the same family as asparagus or agave. It was imported from East and Southeast Asia around 200 years ago. However, if you are looking for a native plant, there are some alternatives. Wireleaf sage, Salvia lyrata, is a ground cover with blue flowers, which attracts butterflies and hummingbirds. A common sage from Central Texas, Texas sedge, Carex texensis, is also a good shade ground cover. Although not a nectar source, its fine textured foliage complements other shade-tolerant flowering plants. Liriope grows in tight clumps that are deep green or variegated in color depending on the species. Lavender, white, or mauve flowers appear in the late summer and early fall, followed by black berries. All species have similar growing needs and are treated similarly, even though they differ in appearance. It is used as an edging plant to line walkways, flower beds, and to define margins in landscape areas. This plant is tuberous-rooted and is well-behaved. Can be used as a grass substitute in some areas. It is a good plant to control erosion at the edge of beds and thrives in sun or partial shade. In well-drained soil, Liriope grows to a height of 12 to 18 inches and can survive in drought conditions. This plant is widely available at local nurseries. Plant 12 inches apart and keep moist until established. Once established, weekly watering with drip irrigation should be sufficient. Fertilize twice early in the season with a slow-release fertilizer. It will stay green through the winter and It will stay green through the winter unless there is a hard freeze that lasts for days. Trimming the grass back during winter helps with the appearance in spring. Simply gather the long leaves in your hand, like a ponytail, and using scissors, cut off about half the length of the leaves. Add the cut leaves to your compost pile. When the plants are mature, you will need to divide them. Gently dig the plant and lift it up. Then use a garden knife or spade to cut into sections, leaving at least 5 shoots with tubers, the roots, and the new planting. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Gardening. Texas Master Gardeners. We are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. Tips for successful onion growth. When onions are first planted, their growth is concentrated on new roots and green leaves or tops. The onion will first form a top, and then when a specific combination of daylight, darkness, and temperature is reached, bulb formation starts. The size of the mature onion bulb is dependent on the number and size of the tops. For each leaf, there will be a ring of onion. The larger the leaf, the larger the ring will be. The confusing part is that each variety needs a particular combination. For instance, a variety that needs many hours of summer light will not perform well in an area that receives fewer hours of light. Onion growers categorize onions in one of 3 ways: short day, intermediate day, and long day. Onion plants are hardy and can withstand temperatures as low as 20 degrees Fahrenheit. They should be set out 4 to 6 weeks prior to the date of the last average spring freeze. When you obtain onion plants, they should be dry. Do not wet them or stick their roots in soil or water. Unpack your plants and store them in a cool, dry place until you plant them. Properly stored onion plants will last up to 3 weeks. Do not worry if the plants become dry. As soon as they are planted, they will shoot new roots and green tops. Before obtaining your plants, you may want to begin soil preparation. Onions are best grown on raised beds at least 4 inches high and 20 inches wide. Onions need a very fertile and well-balanced soil. Organic gardeners should work in rich, finished compost, high in nitrogen and phosphorus, with plentiful minerals. Spread lime if soil is too acidic. If using commercial fertilizer, 10-20-10, make a trench in the top of the bed 4 inches deep. Distribute 1/2 cup of the fertilizer per 10 linear feet of row. Cover the fertilizer with 2 inches of soil. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland. Email Jeanette.Castagnon, that's Jeanette, .Castagnon, at ag.tamu.edu, or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Jeanette Castagnon. Castagnon is a horticulturist with Texas AgriLife Extension Service. She can be reached at 686-4700 or by email at jeanette.castagnon@ag.tamu.edu. Pets of the Week. Gigi, a 2-year-old female Chihuahua mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. Kiwi, a 2-month-old female kitten, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Gigi or Kiwi or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 381-5503. Visit www.odessahumane.org.